Blog Talk Radio.
Be no more. You have the man that takes you inside what goes on in the world of sports. He's in the dugout. He's in the clubhouse. He's right by the water cooler. He is everywhere you need him to be to let you know what's going on. And also, you listen to the movers and shakers in the world of sports. You have found the right place with the legendary Doc Stanley on Sports in Depth. And if I may say that these sports In-Depth Nation is here. The Sports In-Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, good doctor.
It's a Thursday. Another day that good Lord has given to us. Thursday, alive and well. Here at Sports in the Block Talk Radio on the Trust in God. At the network, GW Mike on the highway. What's the talk? Quick science. We're going to talk. We're often GW, Lady A, go grab me on the phone. It should be a show. We're going to do it. Harold Weston, if I get a look. Harold, great conversation with Harold yesterday. And talk about Simon Hearns, Ray Leonard. You know, the style that he brought that was the blueprint to being Tommy Hearns, who will concur, never so lost to anybody. It's the summertime, and we're all getting hot here to support the laser. This is Sam Paulo, thanking God, being alive and well. Sports in the Block Talk Radio on the Trust in God Network. Hosting a big fight card coming up on the 30th of this month. Dante Walker, one the other day, broke his hand. Still, he's a man. Mark Breland in his corner, that's going to be a big plus for him his entire career. They'll lose his mark. Tremendous blow. Mark Breland. Wow. Confirmation. Me and Jerry Bidell talked about something that Emmanuel Stewart, the late great Emmanuel Stewart, my dear friend, had told me that Mark Breland was a what? Hey, he was a man that was on the gym. Let's get down on these, though. Okay? It's one only true God. The man. In terms of being one of where all homage goes, where everything comes from, all great and wonderful things. And always shouting out, I'm going to listen to Rosie and Donia, but as always, we open the show with some homage to God. Give some breaking news. Nationals won. Mets lost. Yankees won. They'll let the fire sale maybe happen. We'll see. Rumors. Time will tell about that. There's some other updates on what's happening with us. What's about 9 minutes? By that time, GW Max will have joined us. We'll be ready to talk some more of the pre signs. A lot of things happening. A lot of questions asked. But right now, the cool in the game. Rules off. We're going to play these pieces of music. Let's record. I want to get to the trouble. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day and ask that you always have your will, have your way. We thank you for last night for lying down, for this morning being up, clothed and right mind. We thank you for the little things we so largely take for granted. Clothes on our back, shoes on our feet, food on our table, health and you on our heart. So Lord, just want to say thank you. Just want to pay homage to you, Lord. And even though we get up off our knees, we don't stop paying homage. Even though we no longer verbally, outwardly talk inside, we can't even meditate and pray. Even though we may walk in and move, we move in acknowledgement, praise, and gratitude to you. In Jesus' name, amen. Can't start a show here and not play a little music. Salute, Brazil. I don't want to listen to remarkable this. I don't want to listen to Rosie. We've also been telling you. She's a number one listener. And, wow. Remarkable. Simply remarkable. Do me a favor right now.
Moça do corpo dourado, do sol de Ipanema, o seu balançado é mais que poema, é a coisa mais linda que eu já vi passar. Porque estou tão sozinho. Porque tudo é tão triste. sozinha. Ah, se ela soubesse que quando ela passa, o mundo sorrindo se enche de graça e fica mais lindo por causa do amor.
You know, Brazil, will be hosting the Olympics next month. First time ever in a Latin American country. And see what's happening. Preparations are being made. Hope they will be a little better than what they were for the World Cup. But regardless, Sports and Dip will be bringing you any inside information needed about that. And it's a long time.
This is Michael Bellamy of Brooklyn Independent Media, and you're listening to Doc Stanley of Sports in Depth on Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Larry Hardesty from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. You're listening to Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. Before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. You have the man that takes you inside what goes on in the world of sports. He's in the dugout. He's in the clubhouse. He's right by the water cooler. He is everywhere you need him to be to let you know what's going on. And also, you listen to the movers and shakers in the world of sports. You are found the right place with the legendary Doc Stanley on Sports in Depth.
Let's jump into the hardwood. The Hoopsters here. Hoopster, what's happening, ladies, in the world of the hardwood? Hoopster, you did remind us that we all, the passing of one of the
Nate Thurman once. I just want to say welcome all our fans out there at Sports and Death, Blog Talk Radio. I want to welcome everybody listening. Thank you for joining in. Also, I want to send our thoughts out to the Nate Thurman, also the Golden State Warrior, also the Cleveland Cavalier. We want to send our thoughts out to him. And hell of a, one of the 50 greatest players, rebounder, and ferocious rebounder and defender. Also played with Will Chamberlain back in the days, San Francisco Warriors.
Yeah.
And then he went to Cleveland, and he was there for a long time. And also, he's an Akron boy also. Everybody didn't know. He also was born in Akron, the same place as LeBron James.
Wow.
That's
very big thing.
That's something, huh?
Yeah. Also, we're going to GW Magazine talking about boxing. Also,
I just want to let everybody know that the Olympics will be starting soon in Rio, as your favorite town. I wish you were there right now, Doc.
Hey, me
Brazil,
too.
In
me
Rio.
Too.
Yeah, so that's going to be Olympics out there. So the women will be playing at the 31st Sunday at Madison Square Garden. So that'll be something to see. Tickets are now available on sale at the Garden to see the women's first Olympic team at the Garden. The women's NBA players.
Wow.
And I know you was last time we was on the show, we was talking about Kevin Durant going to Golden State, and I said that was a bad move, and you said it was a good move because of money reasons. But he stayed in his house for...
So go ahead.
They say he's staying in his house for 2 days. He didn't want to come out.
Well, I mean, you know, the decision he had to make. There was going to be some repercussions. Real quickly, I want to go into. We're talking about Brazil. Let's take a musical interlude for Brazil. Don't let anybody move. A little musical interlude as Brazil. We salute Brazil. And I'm Melissa Rosie, and Brazil will be hosting the Olympics. Don't anybody move. We'll be right back. Sports in Depth.
Danny, you there?
I'm here. Are you going to do a boxing or what's up?
Yeah, we're going to do boxing now.
Mm-hmm.
And if I may say that the sports in-depth nation is here. The sports in-depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Sammy. Take it away, good doctor.
We bring this right back in one more time. Sports at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Network. Last night, Yankees won third straight win over the Baltimore Orioles. Beat them 5-0. They're looking for the sweep today. CC Sabathia's on the mound. Wow. The three losses in a row has Baltimore out of first place, the Red Sox in first place, and Alex Rodriguez is getting close to 700. Mets lost again, and they continue to fall behind the Nationals. Chicago beat them yesterday. We got some boxing things coming up. G-Dub, we just basically started kicking it, so let's just pick up where we left off, or let's go back and do some rehashing. A nice fight card coming up here the 30th in New York City.
Yeah. Got the new home of boxing, the Barclays Center. Got a stacked card. It looks like they're trying to follow up with that Porter and Thurman card that they had. We got Paul Malignaggi fighting Gabby Gabriel Bracero, two local, you know, Gabriel is a local kid coming off of that big win over Danny O'Connor and stuff. It's basically a local guy trying to work into the old, you know, Paulie's a household name, you know what I mean? Not an elite fighter, but a championship-level fighter. And
I tell you what, in all of this, I think when the smoke clears, there's going to be some place in the Boxing Hall of Fame for Paulie Malignaggi.
I don't know about Hall of Fame, good fighter, but
No, I'm thinking, you know, when you we're not talking. I'm just something that, you know, down the line. It's like that faithful veterans committee. You know, the guys that almost got there that really should be there will eventually get there. I mean, Paulie's been and we talked about this too. You know, his springboard to where he's at has really been his ability to be a very outstanding sportscaster. I think what's happened a lot of times is that, you know, he's been sitting ringside as a sportscaster. He said, well, hey, man, you know, we need somebody to fight, and Paul is ready to fight. As Lady A said, the thing that started him on his career was him being an interpreter for Italian radio. He's been a champion for some guys who've never been. He's been durable. And I just think, you know, I mean, no, he's not in the class of Ray Leonard and Ali and those guys. But I think that when the smoke clears, down the line, they will probably find some place for him in the Boxing Hall of Fame. Good card, though. The thing you talked about, too, Mike, it was an undercard. Nobody gave you a better undercard than Don King. You know. T.W.? Okay. Like I said, DK gave you a heck of an undercard, and I think T.W. went back in the studio, and instead we're looking for him to come on back. I wanted to continue on that subject there. It's a Thursday in the Big Apple. Five cards coming up. Yankees saying like they may be salvaging their season as they're looking to sweep the one-time front-running Baltimore Orioles, led by one of the great managers of all time, none other than Buck Showalter. Oops, sir. Well, we're going to get back to GW. We talked about this, too. And as with all boxing, it's SID Sports Net riding with GW on the highway to boxing, and the hoops are putting in some b-ball in there, too. We talked about this, too. The one thing that you were enamored about with this card is that it's just a good undercard.
I'm dying.
And we talked about this. Hey, we talked about this, GW. Nobody gave you a better undercard than Don King. Nobody gave you a better undercard than DK.
He was definitely, we were talking about it. We were spoiled with that. And it attracts clients. It makes the fans happier when they're able to get a stacked card. You know, you're sitting back there waiting until 11, 12 o'clock at night for the main event to go on. If you got a colorful undercard, people stay and they take notice. And you're not dragging it. It makes people spend money. So.
Don King put on the best cards we saw, unless you go back to the 40s and 50s, the old school fight days. Don King put the best fight cards that we've seen.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah. I know. Well, what I remember, you know, to validate this, I remember, you know, we're out in Vegas, and I see Robert Lee Jr. From that. He's rushing to ringside. it's the first fight, and I say, well, Mike, where are you going? He says, Doc. It's opening fight. It's a championship fight. First fight on the card is a title fight. First fight on the card. DK had a card in Mexico. Julio Cesar Chavez is headlining the card. He's got Tito Trinidad and Terry Norris on the card. Tito Trinidad and Terry Norris are on the card. I mean, nobody put them together. I think one of the big things with DK does, with Howard Weston talked about, we're talking Howard too, was, you know, Don surrounded himself with the right people, and which has been my forte here, by the grace of God, you know, getting the right people, getting GW Mike, getting the right people, and I mean, envision this. Two thoughts. First fight on the card, a title fight, okay, and then we're in Mexico. Chavez is headlining the card, and Tito Trinidad and Cherry Norris are also fighting on the card. Without question, greatest promoter of all time. You know, just one of the greatest members of all time. Let's see if we can get Howard Weston to join us, too, here. We're talking boxing. GW is here with us. Also, you know, we talk about the passing of Nate Thurman and the Durant stuff, but we got to remember, too, a guy that was instrumental in radio and basketball here, the loss and the passing of Vaughn Harper.
Oh, yeah, that was very sad, yeah. You know, I used to see Vaughn once in a while because when I used to work down the street, not far from there, on 34th, 22nd, and 3rd, and they was on 3
right,
Park
right.
Avenue. The last time I saw Vaughn, I was getting. They let me out of work early. I ran into our good friend and my ex-boss, got one of the best broadcasters in the world, Larry Hardesty. I ran into Larry. Then ever since then, I seen Vaughn. I said, Vaughn, what's going on? What you doing? I said, yo, man, I just got to just lay me off, man. I was like, what? I mean, Dr. Bob Lee was helping him carry his stuff in his car. It was unbelievable, man. Then after
wow.
They had a stroke. And after that was unbelievable. I was shook. I said, you got to be kidding me. Him and Champagne, they let go. Yep.
Wow.
Unbelievable. But he got back on his feet, started doing satellite radio and stuff. Then, and last time I saw him again, when Blue Magic had a show, I saw him then. He was hosting, and he couldn't hardly walk. So somebody else had to take his place. He wasn't doing well. So we want God bless his soul and the family of BLS, one of the world miss. Also, what's your alma mater? Got to put that in there. I gotta make you feel proud. Voice high. So, you know.
Hell
it,
yeah,
you,
yeah.
That's right. You know how to say something now about voice high now. I don't you think I'm hating on voice high. I had to put that in there.
Yeah.
And also, I want to make another big announcement. on Friday and Saturday, as you know, is Old Thomas Day in Brownsville, the BRC. Friday, they're having a show with Blue Magic and Bonnie Pointer and Ladies of Sky. So that's going to be a hell of a show. Everybody listening on the show, don't miss that show. That's going to be a hell of a show. It's free. You get down there, it's going to be right there in Middle Street on Linden Boulevard. And the Saturday, you know, it's Old Thomas, all the old four players, Roy Free, Otis Wilson, some of the old cats will be out there. So I want everybody to miss that.
The thing, too, about the Brownsville thing that they have, if we look at Brownsville, G-Dub, and look at boxing, you know, Brownsville has produced five heavyweight champions. Floyd Patterson, Mike Tyson, Rick Bowe, Shannon Briggs, okay, and Tim Witherspoon. Not to mention light heavyweight champion Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, who was on the show with us a long time for Eddie, and Mark Breland. So, I mean, just from a boxing standpoint of view, G-Dub,
You left out one more guy as a champion from Brownsville. He's a Danny Jacobs. Can't forget him now. He's from Brownsville. Can't forget him now.
Oh, my goodness. Hoopster, you're right. Wow.
Can't forget him now. He's going to knock you out now for that now.
Hey, listen, speaking of Danny Jacobs, G-Dub, now we're talking about this reluctance of people to fight Triple G. There's a guy I think that would step up to the plate. I mean, what's the story with that? What do you think has been the interlude? I mean, I don't think Triple G's... I mean, would you like to see Triple G and Danny Jacobs, GW?
I think it's a worthy candidate. Number one, you know, everyone says nobody wants to fight Triple G. Nobody wants to fight Triple G. You know, talking to Danny downstairs the last fight at the Porter and Thurman card, he said that they offered him money that was an insult. He's also a champion. And, you know, regardless of anything, he knocked Peter Quillen out in one round. He's been in with some pretty decent guys. He's a solid middleweight. Everyone thought Peter Quillen was a solid middleweight for a while. All right, so moves around. He's got some good power, good watching. It'll maybe answer a few questions about how good Triple G really is. Again, it's hard to say how outstanding he is. Everything looks good. Tested and you have a moving target, we're not going to know. And I think Danny at least could give him some round.
You know, what was amazing about Danny was, and you look at it from the beginning, and all praise to the master in every situation. Now, Danny was a feel-good story when the Barclays Center opened and Oscar was done a great job boxing-wise. Brought boxing back to Brooklyn, and he was the feel-good story. And you know, the guy used to fight. He's going to be fighting again. A guy who holds the aspiring champion, and it's a tremendous story, man. Just the blessing of God. I mean, here's a guy who had cancer. Here's a guy who would never box again. He's the middleweight champion of the world.
Also does commercials too. From the hospital, he had his surgery from. Also, he's done a lot of commercials. Also,
that's good. I think it's a good, solid fight. I mean, listen, you could only go by looking at what the cards that are stacked on the table. You know, you could look at Curtis Stevens. Curtis Stevens fought Triple G, went 10 rounds, whatever it was, with him, and gave him a decent fight for a few rounds. Okay, Curtis Stevens went in and with that guy Nassim Nedam, or the guy, the Frenchman, that was the title. Peter Quillen beat him. Peter Quillen went in with Andy Lee. Peter Quillen beat a lot of guys. Danny knocked him out in one round.
Yep.
So it goes to show you he's had quality opposition under a guy that he fought, and he knocked that guy out in the first round. So on paper, it shows that he could be a decent challenge. You know what I mean? So why not put it in there? Put it on. But give the guy at least money that he deserves. You know what I mean? And that's where it comes down to. And again, that's only one side of the story, but, I mean, these are the things that people want to see. It's not a mega fight. But it's something that should be a consistent, good fight between champions. Something that should be of nature every month, which hopefully they're going to try to start doing again. Which, again, it'll keep the fans. Yeah, is it? Oh, we're Danny Jacobs fighting Triple G. Ah, you know what? That sounds like a decent fight. I'm going to throw it on TV tonight. Nobody's going to rush to fight a pay-per-view, but people will be willing to watch. Like, I'm not just trying to say it. Let's think about the fight the other night. Deontay Wilder. Is Chris Arreola a world-class fighter? Absolutely not.
No.
Chris Arreola went the distance. He didn't go the distance, but he stood in there with Klitschko. He knocked out a couple of guys. He fought for a world title. He's a tough kid, a little out of shape, but he's solid. He's a solid known heavyweight. People tune in to watch it. People watch the fight. What did Deontay do? He did what he was supposed to do. He beat the guy.
But he's hurt also. He's hurt also. He's going to be out for a while, so he has to give up his title.
You write that. I mean, you're right. You like the fact that, well, the bottom line is he won. But you like the fact that he was hurt. I mean, you know, G-Dub, Husa, let's look at it too, man. How many guys would have quit? I mean, we've been talking about this new wave mindset of boxing, G-Dub. But how many guys would have quit? I mean, but I said...
Torrey biceps and a broken hand? Yo, that's crazy.
Yeah, but,
do you have to give up his belt? Do you have to give up his belt?
He won't have to give up his belt.
Yeah, because he's out. He's going to be out until 2016.
Well, yeah, no, it doesn't matter. I mean,
he can still keep his belt? Okay, I just want to know.
No, I mean, he's
not going to take his belt. I mean, he's hurt. I mean, this is not a situation where he's not fighting. But I think let's forget all that. Let's go back to what we talked about, GW. The key to Wilder is Mark Breland. Okay,
as long as
you got Mark Breland in his corner, he's going to stay on the top. You know, Breland has been one of the Mark still has a lot of stuff. Maybe you get Mark on it. A lot of star power, man. But more importantly, is what he brings
and
to the game.
And our good friend, Our good friend too.
Confidence and calm that he brings.
Yes, 100%.
How about you? Go ahead.
Yeah, I like what he just said. The calm that he brings, and the thing is, the thing with Deontay. What I'm really looking forward to seeing is I see a lot of mistakes. Like when he fought that guy, Arturo Spilka. There was a lot of mistakes. Spilka was making him look. He knocked him out.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Sports in Depth, Blog Talk Radio, Christian Garden Network, GW on the highway to boxing along with the Hoopsa. Hey, here's the thing. Bottom line. He won.
He looked
number
good.
One. Number two, he's fighting. I mean, he's staying active. But the biggest thing is number three, is Mark Breland, okay? Because it's what Mark brings to that calm. You know, if you know Mark and who knows him better than me and who's the calm that Mark brings. And the thing about Mark, with his voice, you have to listen. You know, the low tones. But here's a guy. It isn't. Listen, you told me what Milton McCrory told you. I validate what Corey told you is what Emmanuel Stewart told me, my dear parted friend. Mark Breland ruled the Crown Gym. Okay? He ruled the Crown Gym. Okay? The Crown Gym that had Phil McKenty, the first world champion out of there, Tommy Hearns, and Milton McCrory. He knocked down Milton McCrory with 8-ounce gloves on. Okay? Knocked him down with 8-ounce gloves on. He became one of the elite champions of his time. And we talked about this, that, you know, Mark's problem was that Mark lost a zeal for the game when he came into the game and found out that he couldn't be happy anymore. You know, there were barriers now. The politics of boxing. GW Mike has signed with Main Events. I've signed with Don King. Boykin has signed with Top Rank. And so now we can't be buddies anymore. You know, we can't hang out like we used to. Certain things, there were the parameters that were put up at that particular time. But when you talk about a guy, I mean, this was a guy who was tabbed to be the next great Robinson. This is a guy that people forget that Evander Holyfield and Pernell Whitaker and Melvin Taylor rode his coattails into Madison Square Garden. He's the guy that headlined that card. You're talking about a good undercard, too, man. You thought, that's heck of an undercard. Mark Breland headlining the card. Evander Holyfield, Pernell Whitaker, and Melvin Taylor on the same card. Great card by the dude was the main event. But the key to Wilder is listening to Breland. And I think you talked about the fight being on TV. I mean, you can't beat it. You're going through the channels. It's on TV. You got boxing fans who love it. It's not going to cost you harm. And gentlemen, we're talking about the heavyweight champion of the world fighting. So it's the main of them, but the heavyweight champion of the world was on TV. Can't beat that. Can't beat it, gentlemen.
Nope.
He said he's got a. He might develop. I thought that was a very good fight for him the other night. He needs a few more of these. He didn't have the opportunity to learn in his first 30-second fight because it was just guys that are freezing and he was knocking out. Now that he's fighting guys that are willing to fight back, I mean, he's learned a lot. You know, Frenchman was a tough kid. He had a tough time. You know, he was getting hit a lot. He didn't look as square as he was the other night. So he's learning. And the thing with Deontay, he's willing to fire, man. He's willing to get in there and walk in the fire. That's one thing about that. He's got a set of balls, man. He really, really will fight.
Oh, yeah.
He was about to go to, he was definitely going over there to Russia to fight that other kid. I mean, the only level of competition that I think is going to give him any trouble is that kid Anthony Joshua. And you don't, I don't know how serious Joshua is for real, because I got to see him in and really, really bang out with somebody. But he's got a really, really good tight defense and stuff like that. But he's beatable. You know, Deontay's a slithery guy, man. He's lanky. He's got an awkward build where he might look like he's off balance and shit a lot. He's a big guy, man. You got to remember, it's hard for big guys to move that. And he's lean, though. You know, he's not heavy. He's got a, he reminds me of like a Tommy Hearn. Some
right, with that jab. With that jab, too.
Yeah.
You got a hell of a jab.
Yeah.
Right jab, too. Yeah.
I just, my biggest thing is, though, like I said, Mark always did the same thing, though. You know, where his hands were down. Mark always jabbed with his hands down, too. I mean, Mark had that same habit, but what we call a habit might be their style of fighting. You know what I mean? So.
Tremendous. GW, tremendous. Did you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? A habit is a style. And who had more of a style and habit than Ali? I mean, I remember the late Jose Torres said, you know, Ali did everything you were not supposed to do, Ali did. Hands down, movements, everything. But, you know, it's working. It's working. And I think, you know, in GW, I think you got another caller with you, too. In cases like that, fighters are going to pick up habits of their trainers, especially when you have a great trainer that was an outstanding fighter. Well, that was a great fighter. I think some things habitually, and I think, you know, in a lot of ways, G-Dub, could that also be why a trainer is drawn to a certain guy? He sees some of him in that fighter?
Well, the chemistry's got to be there, without a doubt. You know what I mean? And, you know, Mark, we talked to Mark last time. Mark looked like he was okay. You know what I mean? Mark looked like he was enjoying himself. I mean, he didn't look, like he was in the happiest place, but, I mean, that's a job in itself. You know, a trainer coming off training camp along with a fighter coming off training camp, it's a hard job. You know, he's away from his family and all that other stuff, I'm sure. But at the same time, you know, he's still there. I mean, they look like they have good chemistry together. He looks like he's in good spirit. So, Doc, you know more than anybody else. These trainers, it's almost harder for the trainer to be away at these training camps than it is for the fighter. Because the trainer, obviously, most of them were ex-fighters. They're upset because they can't box anymore. They're trying to give back to training these guys. And at the same time, they're putting out the same level of commitment, even more so probably, and making much less money. You know what I mean? Obviously, they're not getting punched in the face, but they're still there every step of the way. And, you know, it's for them to stay focused, it's a very, very, very tough thing. So, you know, I think that's where the chemistry becomes a major importance of, like, a mentorship, a father-son type thing, or a best-friend type thing. And, you know, you see guys that click, Ali and Angelo, they click. You know, even like right now, Abel Sanchez and Gennady Golovkin, they click. You know,
GW.
Yeah.
How vital, and we should know, Sportsnet, Blog Talk Radio, Custom Card Radio Network, we're on the highway to boxing with GW, Mike, and in the gym with those. How vital, and a 1 to 10 scale, is Abel Sanchez to Triple G? Would Triple G...
The proof is in the pudding, because I'm going to tell you why. If you watch Gennady Golovkin's amateur career, I watched a couple of amateur fights. He had an amateur style, but he was a little bit more colorful than your average fighter from that part of the world. Sanchez was able to turn his style into a pro-friendly style that sold tickets. That's the key ingredient. He took his style, made it comfortable as a pro, but is able to sell tickets at the same time. Now, if you watch Gennady Golovkin,
I want you to keep talking. I'm going to try to get Howard Weston to join us also here. But go ahead, GW. Hit it, baby. No, no, you talked about his style. Go ahead, continue, G-Dub.
But at the same time, he's giving you a lot of shoulder. He shifts his balance in the right direction all the time, where his body is always in perfect position to land a punch, whether it's on your elbows, whether it's on your arms. So, again, it's not as fast as...
And Triple G will be going back into the ring as, once again, the continual of importance, I guess, as Alvarez was supposed to, well, the consensus was, the thought was that Alvarez and Triple G would meet. So many ludicrous things were happening.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, G-Double. Oh, no, we're going to do. Let's take a little visual interlude real quick. And I want to get a hold of Howard Weston to probably join us. We'll be back with Sports and Block Talk Radio and Trust and Guard. And Eric, the Hoopster is here. G-Double's mic is here. Don't anybody move. Herbie Mann, because a little music. Let's find Mr. Weston for a minute or two. And sound of Herbie Mann in the background. And let's get back to the sounds of the Sweet Science with G-Dub and the Hoopster. G-Dub, in conversation, you were talking about some things, and you broke down the Triple G setup. We talked about the upgrade on the cards by Don King. I see you had another voice there with you, so they can join us in, please. Talk about Polly. You like this card that's coming up. And we talked about Emmanuel, the Cronk Jim. We keep losing back and forth. Who's Do you think Durant may have regretted his decision? Or is just, I mean, you say he hit out in the house a couple of days. Do you think he's having some regrets about it?
No, not at all. I don't think so. I think he thought about it. I think it's over with now. So he's focused on the Olympics right now. So we'll see when we get on the court. We'll see where his head's at. So that's where we're going to see the test. When you go back to OKC, that's where we're going to see where his head's at. So it was already a tough decision. He made what he had to do. He did it for him and his family, so he did what he had to do. So, like I said, we'll see when the season starts. That's when we'll see where his head's at. So now he's going to be the villain of the NBA now. He's going to be the bad guy in the Golden State Warriors. So we'll see, Doc. And also, Doc, so you know they got to – say that again?
I said, you know, I'm thinking – It's all healthy, Hoopster. It's all healthy. We got a chance to see a team win back-to-back games, back-to-back 70-win seasons, Hoopster.
Yeah, we'll see. I think they'll get 60. They're going to lose more games. I think they'll definitely make the – they'll probably get 60 wins. They'll probably lose more because we'll see. We can bust that team, got to know how to gel and play together. So that's going to be tough. So – it's like when LeBron went to Miami. They didn't know how to gel the weather, and then Dallas Mavericks beat them. And that year they beat OKC, remember?
Yeah, but how hard do you see that being, Hoopster? Is it not so much them playing together as it is the egos? I mean, I think you know, people can be wrong. I think when besides Jay, when the players themselves went to him, I think they said, you know, hey, Hoopster, man, join the crew. Hey, Hoops, I know you want to handle the ball. We're going to let you handle the ball. Hoops, so we're going to let you shoot that J when you want. Hoops, so come to us, and now it's going to be your team.
Can I tell you something? I've been in those situations before. I had to sit back and a cut. When I was playing for Big Red, with Red last program, I had to change my game around. I had to come off the bench. I had to pass more, play more defense, rebound more. So sometimes you got to sacrifice your game to make other people happy.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, if they're willing to make the sacrifice, and more if they do make the sacrifice, this could be. You know, I remember the Sixers when they got Julius Erving. They already had George McGinnis. They had World Be Free. It was Lloyd Frieden. They had Darrell Dawkins. They had
Carwell
Maurice
Jones.
Cheeks,
Harry Bibby.
Carwell Jones. I mean, they were picked to win. And yeah, okay, Jelly Bean, Bill Bryant, Kobe's dad. And I remember they asked the great Walt Frazier, excuse me, a reporter said, you know, the Sixers just got Dr. J, what do you think? And he said, has any team went 82 and all, with the understanding that they would play together as a team? And, you know, that wasn't so much the case. Let me just get back to boxing real quick, though.
Boxing. You know, I want to say something about that. You know, also, I want to ask you guys both of your opinions, because I know you're boxing experts. As you know, they come out with a movie, but your good friend, one of the greatest Hands of Stone fighters, Roberto Duran. What are your thoughts on that, gentlemen? A movie about Roberto Duran.
Well, there's nothing to think about. There's nothing. Roberto Duran, and Mike, I think you can talk to him. Roberto Duran is the greatest Latin fighter that ever lived. There's nobody remotely close. I mean, I saw a documentary where they had him and Juan Diego Chavez. There's nobody remotely close. And the thing that Duran can stand on, to validate that alone, which he doesn't have to. As the great Marion Borchett said, he beat Sugar Ray Leonard. Roberto Duran came up two weight classes past his prime to beat arguably the second greatest welterweight of all time. That's all you need to know. I mean, we're not talking about his dominance as a lightweight. No, which he dominated that division, who's his greatest lightweight of all time. You know what I mean? We're just talking about the mama. Angelo Dundee said something in his book that I found a little startling. He said that had Duran learned English, he'd been bigger than Ali, which I think Duran is. I think you know, Angelo is a little facetious at maybe stuff. But still, the point is, in the era of Ali, you knew Duran. In the era of Ali, the second Ali, not the first Ali, of course, Duran was the best fighter in the world pound for pound. Okay?
One of the biggest hands I've ever seen, too.
I'm a great guy. Great movie. GW. Durant, I mean, when you say Roberto Duran, what comes off your lips, GW?
Greatness. I mean, it's you know, epic. He just alone when he won the middleweight title, he won fights with such finesse. Like, you know, you look at when he beat Barkley, right? somebody was talking to me about that fight with Barkley. Not only did he come up and win a middleweight title when he was written off, but the way that he knocked Barkley down just trumped everything at win, and how epic he knocked him down. The way that the punches swung through, the way he hit him with those right hands, the way he knocked him down, it was epic. You know, it was everything that he could ask for in a late round knockdown big fight. And Duran was a closer. I mean, he was a closer of a fight. He knew how to fight. And, you know, he was Roberto Duran. I mean, you know what? It's like we say, Don. When you think of Ali, you can't put great, you can't put good, you can't put amazing. You can only say Ali. You know what I mean? That's it. Ali's name, say the name Ali, you think automatically a million thoughts come to your head. You just know what he was. He represented what Ali was. Duran is one of those guys, Roberto Duran. When you think of Duran, Duran is Duran. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, he did not speak English. It's like, how would I put this? I know you're not big on Bernard Hopkins being one of the greatest, but he has a career that is a well established career.
Bernard Hopkins has an outstanding resume, but you know the point you're making. Duran didn't have to learn to speak English. You know, I remember being in Gleason's gym as he's training for Davey Moore, and I'm looking down at the bottom of the ring, and a guy's looking up at me, and I said, "Wow!" And the guy said, "No, this guy's always been my fighter." And I'm thinking the guy's from Panama. The guy's from Ghana. I mean, the English wasn't the barrier. What you're saying is the superlatives come off your lips and in your mind when you say names like Ali, Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard. Bernard Hopkins has been a great champion and accomplishment. His style is one that's boring and dour. How he stacks against the greats. I mean, me and Howard Weston talked about this the other day, and it shows the deterioration of the game, which both of you gentlemen can concur to, the fact that this guy at this advanced age can not only still be in the game, but win. To the guy his age, still win back in the day with Tommy, Hagler, Rand, Duran. To this guy, could he be a heavyweight back in the day with Ali, Frazier, Foreman, Floyd Patterson, Zorro Foley? No. But I take nothing away from him as a great champion. But he is not.
The reason why I bring it up, what I was trying to compare was, before his later accomplishments that we knew about, this guy had a whole middleweight reign. He had a whole middleweight run that is a record of its own. What I'm trying to compare is like with Duran.
And you know what, GW? You know what? And the guy that he owes this to is Don King. When Don King put him in that tournament. I mean, him, Keith Holmes, Warren Joppy, Tito Trinidad. I mean, it was DK, and at one time he was still with DK. DK was funny one time. I guess Bernard was giving him problems. We had a press conference, and DK said, "How do you spell trouble? B-R-N-A-R-D." You know, I mean, but if you remember G-Dub and our other colleagues, you know, at that time Bernard was with Lou DiBella. Remember? Yep. He was Lou DiBella's middleweight.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
He was Lou DiBella's middleweight. Sports Net Blocks Talk Radio and Trust and Doug. Go ahead, G-Dub.
The reason why I brought that up is I wanted to just finish saying about Duran. What people don't understand is, I mean, when I compare Hopkins' middleweight run, Roberto Duran had lightweight run, like you were saying before. His career as a lightweight alone, you know, puts him at a place in history. And then this guy goes out with a whole other four careers and cements his legacy in three other divisions. You know what I mean? So it's like, holy shit. So that's why you say, when you say Duran's name, he did things in epic fashion. You know what I mean? He won fights, big fights.
Like
with Davey Moore, he won fights in memorable fashion. And these
GW, for you to talk about that Davey Moore fight, and I remember, I thought it was a attack of lunacy in the sport when people thought Davey Moore's going to beat Duran. And I remember sitting ringside, once again, all by the grace of God. Love you, Tasha. And Roger Bear. That was June 16th, 1983, the last great night of boxing in Madison Square Garden. It also was Duran's birthday. The place was full. I remember Roger Bear sitting next to me. What a great human being he is, my friend Rod. And talking about how they were there pulling for this great star who was now advanced in age. The Garden Rock, June 16th, 1983, on a Saturday, Duran beat David Moore for the Junior Middleweight Championship of the World, which was on his birthday. We all went out victors. The last great night of boxing in the Garden, the kind of atmosphere that you boxing guys would have loved. You know, the excitement, the anticipation, the acknowledgement. I've long been, boxing fans have long been the most intelligent of sports fans, and it was, and there he was. You know, I mean, he won the fight alone. He, either way, of experience or of talent. And he beat Davey Moore. He's a guy who was the greatest lightweight of all time. Hey, listen, Mike, if you guys remember, hey, listen, he was beating Hagler. Had that been a 12-round fight, he would have beat Marvin. But he was in there against Marvin Hagler, who was unquestionably one of the great middleweights of all time. Okay, so you look at his resume. It's extensive. I saw a magazine some years ago. It named the top three fighters from 1949 on, because 49 was when Joe Louis retired. Number one was Sugar Ray Robinson. Number two was Muhammad Ali. Number three was Roberto Duran. I mean, just to be in that kind of company. Sugar Ray, and I heard, I've been told by the schoolmaster, that Ray Robinson's son said that Roberto Duran was the best fighter he ever saw. That, you know, when you're in that kind of company, you know what I mean? He's been my favorite Latin fighter. Him and Ali have been 1 and 1A. And like I said, I think what we have to look at, that we were talking about it, there was no language barrier for Duran. Once he got in that ring, man, he spoke the language. You know, once he got in that ring, I mean, there really was no language barrier. You know, it's like love. You know, the girl may not speak English, but the heart does all the talking, man. And like I said, he could rest solely on beating Ray Leonard in Montreal. I mean, when you listen to the great Marion Boykin, and Marion Boykin said it comes up two weight classes at a time where weight classes were still important, you know, because no catchweight now, comes up two weight classes and beat arguably. Are you talking about Ray Charles Leonard? You're talking about one of the greatest fighters. I mean, let's say take your fight still. Ray Leonard's resume has him beating Roberto Duran, Tommy Hearns, Marvin Hagler, and Wilfredo Benitez. Yep. Marvin Hagler, okay, after being out 4 years, Benitez, both in their prime, the legendary Roberto Duran, and Tommy Hearns. Okay, the second fight, okay, Tommy is going to do it, but still. So it's just remarkable. It's just remarkable, man. You talk about Roberto Duran. So glad him having the movie. De Niro's going to play Ray Arcel. I got a chance to meet Ray Arcel's lovely wife, Mrs. Teresa Arcel. I remember, I forget what she said. You know, she's one of the two ladies that I heard say such complimentary things about their man. I remember Audrey Chambers, and nobody sings Don't Let Me Lose This Dream better than she does. And she was performing as when Chris was still the batting coach of the Yankees. And she said, you know, she said, I want to introduce my better half. I never heard a lady say that about her husband. I never heard a lady say that. And I remember I talked to Mrs. Arcel, and there's two things that stood up. She called me Melvin, and her name was Teresa, my beloved baby sister. And I asked her, Mrs. Arcel, how was it, you know, being married to Ray Arcel? And I'll never forget what she said. She said, Melvin, it was Christmas every day with that man. Man, how that touches your heart. It was Christmas every day with that man. You know, and Audrey Chambers, let me introduce my better half. Man, these are the jewels that the Bible talks about as a virtuous woman. Sports at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. Okay, I got another call. 646-322-2890. Who's joining us?
Harold Weston.
The legendary Harold Weston, baby.
Hey, Harold, how you doing, man? Hall of Famer. How you doing there?
I'm doing fantastic, fellas.
That's good, man.
Harold, we talked about some things yesterday, man, and, you know, I can't get on the phone. Anytime I get on the phone with you, Harold, it should be a radio show. Over the intellect you bring, man. And you know, we talked so much yesterday about a whole lot of things. GW, Mike, we got Harold Weston here with us now. So now it's all
hey,
over
Harold,
it. It's all
how
over
are you,
it.
Man?
Okay, sir.
Doing,
how you doing?
Good.
Harold,
Doc, I'm sorry,
you know, don't worry about it. Just keep coming back. Harold, everybody's talking Triple G. What do you see? And what's all this thing about the avoidance of Triple G? I mean, I know you got to be sick to your stomach that guys are ducking, but what's the story with Triple G, Howard Weston? Howard, what's the story with Triple G?
Well, Triple G is like from the old school. He's got a little polish from the old school. And these guys today don't want no kind of fight that there is a threat to them losing. I mean, a little threat. They'll pull out. And so Triple G is one of those guys that they know that is going to give them a rough time, no matter who he fights. And these guys today don't want to go through that, because all this thing in boxing is try to get as much money out of your fight as you can, because these promoters are just looking for the dollars that they can get out of the fighters that they got signed up. And the fighters that they have signed up can't fight anyway. They built them off, you know, jive wins. And so Triple G will be a threat to them, because if they get knocked off, then they can't demand those big dollars. And that's what the big problem is. I mean, can you imagine these guys getting millions of dollars? The Dawn opponents get $600,000 and all that. Do you know what we'd have did back in the day for that kind of money? We'd be fighting each other every week for that kind of money. That money was up there. I mean, you know,
hey, Harold, you fought every week, Harold?
Every week, we were fighting each other every month for just $50,000. So you know what we'd do for $600,000? Jesus Christ. You know? And with a cut eye. Man, please.
We
line them up. He said, Harold, when you fight? I'm fighting on the 22nd of July, and the next fight is July 29th of July.
Harold,
how much did you, if you don't mind me asking, what did you guys used to make for, like, a main event fight back in the day?
I mean, it all depends. I mean, it was nothing, but I can tell you, you know, the highest purse I got was like $50,000. I mean, that was the highest one I got. But when Ray Leonard came in, you know, the purses went up. You know what I'm saying? So that was the whole thing. That's when I fought Benitez, and the winner, we had in our contract, the winner was going to get $1 million fighting Ray Leonard for the title. Whoever won between Benitez, and, you know, that's why I know the politics was in the game, because I knew that barrier was right there for, you know, for Benitez to win. So they told me, they said, if anything close, Harold, you ain't going to get the decision. Tell you like it is. So that was the name of the game. But I gave my all. I gave it my all, but, you know, I was in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, and not only were you in Puerto Rico, you were in Puerto Rico with your corner and your son. I remember that fight. You know what I mean? We're talking about a stacked deck.
Yeah, everything was stacked against me. I mean, you know, they really wanted Benito to knock me out. But the fact is, he knew he could knock me out. But at the same time, they knew what they were doing. Believe me, man. I knew what the game was. But, I took a shot, you know, and I came up short. But I did not come up short. You know, I became system matchmaker, Madison Square Garden after. I had a better job and better life than everybody after that.
Hmm. GW, any boxing thing, you know, you jump back in. We talked about that, you know, the matchmaking at the Garden. But we also talked, as we do redundantly, the fight that ended your career was the injury to Tommy. Can we talk about Tommy? You talked about the viciousness of Tommy Hearns. Can you talk about Tommy, that era? I remember you had the blueprint. I mean, Tommy, it was a victory for Tommy that he just got, because the injury, you were about to take him out. But Hagler, Ray Leonard, you were the guy, because you told me nobody's going to fight Tommy until they saw your blueprint, Harold.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to understand, Tommy was coming in like a herd of buffaloes, okay, and in the top 10. I mean, he did. I mean, he was coming in like a herd of buffaloes. He had knocked out Clyde Gray. He had knocked out some real top contenders in that 19 wins that he had, okay? And he was just fighting guys and beating guys up. And then everybody said, man, this guy is more of a killer than Sugar Ray Robinson. And, you know, of course, Tommy was tall and everything.
Right.
So word was just out. Tommy was a deadly guy. And then Ray Leonard knew from the amateurs, but Ray never fought him. But they just had the word out on him. And so I just kept hearing about it. I didn't know who Tommy Hearns was. So when they came to me with the offer and everything, because the only time I saw him, he was knocking somebody out. That was the only thing. I mean, just he's just knocking somebody out. I mean, every time I saw him, he's just knocking guys out. So, I mean, it was like, Jesus Christ, where the heck is this guy come from, right? So they finally come to me. They say, hey, Hal, you want to fight Tom Harris? I said, yeah. So he said, let's take a ride. He's fighting in Philadelphia on such and such day. Let's take a ride down there. So I said, okay. And the person that I gave that offer to, and you guys will not believe it, and this was his last fight he ever did, all right? And he was a friend of mine, but a lot of people hated him, okay? Teddy Brenner.
Wow.
Wow. Funny, yeah, because that's the guy that you took over for as the matchmaker at the Garden.
Yeah. Teddy Brenner. Well, I took over for Gil. No, I didn't take over for Gil. I took over for what's his name? Duke Savannah. Because Duke was the assistant matchmaker.
You know what? You know what? Yeah, I forgot about that. What I'm saying is, when you talk about great matchmakers at Madison Square Garden, the two names that come up is Teddy Brenner and Harold Weston. Yeah, and that shows what you did and what Brenner did, because the names in between, it's not even in my head and mind, Harold. I know is Teddy Brenner and Harold Weston. That's all I know, you know? And that's a remarkable. Yeah. Go ahead, Harold. Go ahead.
Well, you know, Teddy gave me a lot of fights at the Garden and all that and everything. Gil called me up and he said, hey, man, he said, Teddy got a fight for you, man. Do him a favor. Take the fight with him. He said, you know, he's this kid named Tommy Hearns. I said, well, okay, I heard of him. And everything. So he said, what Teddy wants to do, he wants to take you down there. You take a look at him. He's fighting in Philly in the next couple of days. And you go down there. So I went down. Teddy drove me down there with my father. And we sat down there. And we looked at the fight. In the third round, I got up. I said, let's go home, man. They said, you don't want to see none? I said, no, I've seen enough. I said, I see what he can do. Make the match. And that was it.
I want to ask Hal, what do you think about the Burr Duran movie coming out? The movie about Duran.
I think it's going to be very interesting because Duran had a very much crazy life. I mean, he was a guy, he did some wild things, you know what I'm saying? And you got to understand, back in them days, you know, Duran was coming up and I heard about Duran, let me tell you, before he became champion of the world, okay, when he was a lightweight. And the guys, because we had a lot of Panamanians in our gym back then, all right? A lot of these Panamanians came. They came like they came over on the boat, okay? And there was all these Panamanian fighters in our gym. And, I mean, these guys could fight. I mean, they could really, really fight. And they was in our gym, and they was in New York for a while. They was here for about like 2 or 3 years. And every one of the Panamanians that was here became world champions. Okay, in different weight divisions, okay? But they were telling me, they were telling me about Roberto Duran the whole time. And they said, you guys better watch out for this guy named, we got a guy named Roberto Duran who's knocking guys out. He said, believe me, man, this guy's going to be champ of the world, and ain't nobody going to be able to stop him, right? Because most of the Panamanians back in those days wasn't punchers. They were more boxers, okay? And they were very good boxers. But Duran was the new thing. He was a puncher because the Panamanians never was known to be punchers. They were more boxers. They were more thinking. And so that was the whole thing about Duran. And then when Duran came here and fought a 10-round fight, I forgot who he fought at the time, but he just ran over the guy and everything. But it was amazing. But what happened was he got so involved with the money and the women and all the attraction that he just got lost in the whole thing of life. And that's what happens to a lot of guys. If you don't have those right mentors and people that's on top of you and people that you respect, you just go off the cliff. You just go off the cliff. And that's what the problem is.
All right.
Well, you also said that, Harold, the
rapid deterioration of fighters, especially the Latin fighters, and because you know we're talking guys from the streets now. They're in abundance. I mean, you know, just 3 meals a day is a big deal. Some place to sleep in it, so they get wrapped up. And you talked about that tremendous point that you bring, Harold. And it's the reason why now, as you learned here, ladies and gentlemen, Sports Net Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Carver, it's the reason why Duran, you know, got the moniker Hands of Stone, because guys at that weight was, like you said, they wasn't knocking people out. They were like Pedroza and Laguna. They were sweet boxers, but they had no punch. Duran was a monster that he had the speed and the power, right, Harold?
Right, and he did. And he was a clever little fighter, too. Don't get me wrong. We knew what he was doing, you know. And the thing was, the guys saw the technique in him. But who knew, who had the blueprint on him and understood? The Jesus. The Jesus had the blueprint on Duran. And that's the reason why he beat Duran the first time, because he had the blueprint on. And I saw that when they fought. And I said, oh, that's how you fight him. And that was the whole thing about the Jesus and Duran. Every time they fought, the Jesus gave him trouble. He gave him trouble, always gave him trouble.
Well, you know, what was it, Harold, that was the problem? Sports and Death Blocks, like Radio and Trust and Garland Network, the only MSG welterweight champion, the only out-of-home matchmaker in the history of Madison Square Garden. I've said this again to his face behind his back. The Boxing Hall of Fame ain't the same until they get Harold. What particular thing was it that you saw that Esteban had that gave, I guess, or maybe it was that old classic line, Harold, the styles of... Esteban has passed away. I have my Trust and Guard Sports and Intellect Museum. One of my most valued pictures is an autographed picture of both of those guys, you know. But what was it that Esteban had that was a problem for Roberto, Harold?
What it was is that a lot of people couldn't figure out, a lot of guys, boxers couldn't do anyway. The Haitians knew how to counterpunch Duran. You got to understand, if I know how to counterpunch you, then that's going to make you be leery about throwing punches. What you could not let Duran do is get off first. And that's how he beat everybody. He got off first because he was a big puncher, okay? But if you can counter off that for him getting off, that will make him hesitating about getting off first. And now you got him at a pace where you can nail him instead of him keep coming after you. And that's what the Haitian was good at. And that's what the Haitian was able to beat him every time. Because he was more of a counterpuncher than everybody else. And most of the guys were not counterpunchers. And Duran can get off more quicker and keep at it because you don't have no offense for him because you're trying to get the hell out of the way. But if you can counter off his attack, then that's going to make him hold off by not even hitting him that much.
Wow. Now, explain to the fans what you mean by counterpuncher.
Well, that means that when you throw, let's say you throw a left hook, when you throw a left hook, I'll catch it and drop a right hand right down your chin. You know, if you throw a jab, I'll catch your jab with my right hand and hit you with my jab or hit you with a left hook. If you throw a jab at me and I slip it, I'll dig into your body punches. So it's like all the things that you do, I will counter off it and nail you with it because you're going to be wide open because your hands left your body and that makes you wide open for the counter.
In other words, when you say the right hand, I'm going
to deliver. Let me just say this to you, fellas. Not many people understand that, but, you know, there's only a few that knows how to do it. That's the reason why.
Really? You know what? You were an outstanding counterpuncher, and one of the guys that talked about some of the great counterpunchers, too, was Curtis Coates.
Yeah, and, you know, that was the reason why when I learned how to learn my defense and got my defense down pat, I was coming, didn't make no difference who I fight because I knew what I was going to do, and I knew a lot of guys was not adjusted to that kind of style, and they just couldn't understand it because a lot of guys don't have defense. Everybody's more offensive, and if everybody's got a defense, they keep with the defense. It's like Floyd Mayweather. You keep him on the defense, he'll stay in the defense, but you got to keep that pressure on him to keep him that way because he'll roll, and think you're going to get tired. But if you a guy that knows like Duran will beat the shit out of Floyd Mayweather. All right? He'll beat the shit out of him. He stand there and do that defense like that at lightweight, he'd have killed him. He'd have killed him. It would have been a joke.
Harold, you and you sort of, no, it ran to, like you said, He had some defense, but that was part of your era, Harold. I mean, as a fighter, you had to know how to. You just went all offense. You had to, you know, you had to know all the in and outs of the game. And, it's,
right.
and you talked about this yesterday. You talked about this yesterday. You know, where guys are talking to you on the telephone, and the next day they got a gym open, lessons by Harold West, you know, you're perpetrating the fraud out. Talk about the fake trainers today and the people who have no clue about the game, Harold.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just got – you got guys now that, you know, that mostly all the great ones has left us, and these guys, these invitation guys are out here fooling these young people and just telling them that they've been in boxing for 25 years. But look at it. We're in 2016. You put another 9 more years from 1990, then you got 25 years. But you know what? You ain't learned a damn thing. It's like going to school and sitting in school and hearing a teacher talk all the tests and tell you how to find who was Christopher Columbus and George Washington, but you sitting there, you don't know who they are, and at the same time, you ain't learned nothing. So you went to school for 8 years, 10 years, right? And you just sat there. That don't mean you learned anything, and that's what happens. These guys go to these gyms, mess around for 20 years, and they still don't know nothing. And that's what the sad part about the game. You got people being fraud. And at the same time, the blind is leading the blind. And that's the reason why you got a lot of these kids can't fight anyway.
Sports and Death, Blast Talk Radio, on the Trusted Guard Network. Harold Weston Jr. is here with us. We've also got GW Mike, the Hoopster. Hoopster, go ahead. I know you got a question, too. Harold, go ahead and shoot it to him, Hoopster.
Yeah, I want to ask Harold, who was your toughest fight you ever fought?
Hedgman Lewis.
Hmm. Right, his jab or the way he moved?
Nah, because he was smart. He was a thinker.
He was a thinker,
and he was smooth and everything.
You know, that's remarkable. Now, ladies and gentlemen, understand what he's telling you. Hedgman Lewis, this is a guy that hit 562 against a pitcher, and he's telling us the toughest pitcher he ever hit, ever had. Harold Weston Jr. beat Hedgman Lewis so thoroughly that Ryan O'Neal, his manager and the movie star, had said he had never seen anybody beat Hedgman Lewis like that, and you know, and that's remarkable, man. You know, because it's there's a guy hitting 500 and get, and he's your toughest pitcher, and you know, it's remarkable how, you know, when you look at the guys you fought beneath this and just sort of a horde of guys. What was it about Hedgman that made him so tough for you, Hal?
Well, he was like Benitez, and I got put Benitez in that category, too, because they were both thinkers. They were real thinkers, you know what I'm saying? And it's like us playing chess, and it's like you got the best chess player in the world, and you feel that you're the best chess player in the world. It's a thinking situation, and any mistake you make, you're going to pay for it. And that was the whole thing about Hedgman and Benitez. They were so slick that you had to think, and when you get hit with a shot, You can't get all upset. You just got to say tonight. I said it a couple of times in the fight when he hit me with a couple of good shots, and I said, "God damn, that was a pretty move." I had to give him credit for it. I mean, because it was just amazing how he pulled some things off. Okay, and that was, you know, with him Benitez. I mean, I remember I threw 5 punches at Benitez, and he was on the ropes, and I missed every punch, and I just said, "Damn." Yeah, this little, I said, well, you know, I don't want to curse, but I just said, you know, I just said the man is bad. I'm just gonna leave it like that. But yeah, I mean, you give those kind of guys respect, and they stay in there with you. And then when you do something to them, they look at you and smile because they, you know, you done did something slick. So that's where, you know, it's great when you have guys that's equal to you, and you learn something from them too. When you get into that kind of chess match with them,
you know, I think that's the big thing you're talking about too, Howard, is when you fight quality fighters, there's things like you said, there's a learning lesson, there's a process. You know, you even if it's an L, it's not a total loss because with the L comes a learning process, and that's been something that's gone from the game. You know, guys that don't know nothing surely can't teach you anything, Harold.
Right, right. And that's what happened. That's why I feel sorry for the young kids today in all sports. is that they, you know, them guys, the old crew is going, and they're not getting they're just getting guys that's telling them to do things, but having no thoughts of what they're doing and how to come about it to come, if they make mistakes, what do they do after? And knowing why they're doing this. You know what I'm saying? Why are we throwing a jab? Why are we throwing the right hand? What are we doing with the left hook? Why are we going to the body? You got to know why. There's a why. Why are you doing this? But these guys don't know the answers to a why. So basically, they just think you're supposed to just do it. No, there's a reason why you do it. And that's where the downfall is, because these guys never took time out to learn this kind of methods out there. That's come, you see, every fight, if you can see today, fellas, you haven't seen one guy throw a four-punch, five-punch combination in boxing yet and be in a right stand and be perfectly executing those kind of punches. You haven't seen nobody do it yet.
Yeah.
And that's deep, and I'm telling you the whole boxing world right today. You have not seen one fighter, not even Floyd Mayweather, throws a four or five. He throws it on the mitts when he's with his trainer. But why doesn't he do it in the ring when he fights somebody? Because he can't do it. Because you got to have that person in a certain place, and you got to have a certain timing to do that. And he can't execute those things because he's not that smart to do it.
Okay. Something else.
And that's the reason why I said, you know, maybe, well, he's all right, but I mean, we'd have took him to school. Ask his daddy. It's simple as that.
So, Hal, who you like to train? As a fighter? Hal?
Who did I what?
If you want to be a trainer, who you would like to train?
Train? I don't know. I mean, I had quite a few kids. You know, I think that the guys that I had made world champions, they were more level headed, and I loved training them. They all, you know, they all fit into the mold. The reason why I trained, I gave them advice and dealt with them and took them aboard is because their mindset was ready to learn and listen to what I was getting ready to say. And they were going to execute the things that I was going to tell them to do. And they were going to sacrifice with the things they were going to face that I was looking for them to do. So basically, those seven guys that I have made world champion was the key point. Because I was very selective. Mel can tell you, I was very selective about who I was going to match and who I was going to put in my position to build up to be a world champion. It was very good,
okay.
Guys. And you would know if I put them on the card all the time.
At the same time, Hal, though, you know, you gave them no easy. You showed no favoritism, and you gave them no pushovers. I mean, I'll never forget coming in your office and you sitting there. That guy that go over there, Mr. GQ, and you was on the phone. I'll never forget this, man. I see it now, and you're on the phone. I don't care if he's green, white, blue, or yellow. Can he fight? You're on the phone, Harold. I'm not lying. You ain't lying. I was in your office, Harold. You're on the phone. I'll never forget this. Long live. You're on the phone. I don't care if he's green, white, blue, or yellow. Can he fight? Okay?
Yeah, because you know what it was, Mel? You know what it was, fellas? You got a lot of guys that got this myth that all black fighters can fight, okay? All Dominican guys could punch. You know what I'm saying? You got all these myths that you have heard in life, and it has traveled, and people will tell you that, you know, because he's black, he can fight. No, it's not true. Not true. I mean, somebody's got to teach him, but if he learns well, yeah, he might be all right. But not all of them can fight. So I got to the point where I just got tired of hearing guys tell me about this is a black fighter and blah, blah, blah. Like this is supposed to be automatic. No, it's not automatic. There's got to be some teaching be done just to make him learn how to fight. And even if that, I don't know if he's got the brain or the determination to move on. So that was the reason why
Hal,
I just said that.
Stop. You said the brain. I think people have gotten away from realizing that you call the discreet sides. Harold talked about fighting Hedgeman Lewis and Robert Benitez, the chess match, the little things they did, the insecurities, the little things they did that for that kind of the concept of the chess. People have forgotten how that this is not brutes. Now this is not Animal Fletcher. No, Animal Fletcher is the exception, not the rule. Ray Boom Boom Mancini, Harold Weston, Benitez, Ray Robinson, Ray Leonard, Larry Holly. Boxers, that's the sweet science hour. I think people forgot that. You got to be cerebral. You know what I mean? Because the heavyweight is heavyweight now. You got the strawweight. You got the flyweight. Welterweight, they're not big guys. Harold, it takes brains to be a fighter.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I remember Marvin Al, manager, me and him got in an argument. I wouldn't talk to him for almost 3 months, okay? He took Mark into a fight. And I told him not to do it because I didn't like the guy he was fighting. He went with another promoter because he wanted to help the guy out, right? I said, Bullet, this ain't no helping. This ain't no charity, excuse my name, charity, okay? And he did it anyway. You know, this is when manager thinks he knows more than you, okay?
Yeah.
So now I find out he's fighting who he's fighting, right? I said, why are you taking that fight? That guy, no, the guy lost. I said, I don't care how many lost. The guy can punch like a big dog. And he comes from Philadelphia. Are you crazy? Now we got him. We got him. I said, yeah, all right, boom. All right. Fight began. I was there. First round. Boom, bang, Mark is down. Mark gets up. Mark hits the guy. Guy came back. Hits Mark. Boom. Mark goes down again. Bell rings. Next round. Guy runs across the ring. Boom, bang. Mark is knocked out. I grabbed my stuff.
Wow.
Walked out. Okay? Walked out of the ring. The fight was in Jersey, too. And Eddie tried to call me. I wouldn't take his phone call for 3 months. He had Gil give me a call. Gil said, I know you're mad. And you have a right to be mad because I have now built Mark up. Mark at that time, record was with me. He was 10-11-0, okay? And you know, Mark, and you remember Mel, you said to me, why are you doing Mark? He's so slow. I mean, ain't nothing I say, but he can punch, and he's a determined young man. Nobody can understand why I dealt with Mark McDowell, but I knew he was going to be champion of the world. Mm-hmm. Then when I finally talked to Eddie started saying, hey, man, whatever you want, I will do it. I'm not going to go against you no more. You are in charge. You know, I said, Eddie, I'm telling you, if you don't listen to me one more time, this is over. This is completely over. He listened. In the next year and a half, we moved all the way up to the championship, right? Who do we go in there? We're fighting a guy named Earl Hargrove, undefeated, out of Philadelphia. Fighting for the junior middleweight champion of the world. We are underdogs by 10-1. Did you hear me, fellas? This is a guy I picked for us to fight for the junior middleweight title. I picked him, okay? And I knew we was going to win. And we did. We knocked him out in 3 rounds.
Mm. Wow. Mm. Wow.
And
yeah,
that's
you told me the story.
Yeah, that's when Mark became the human. And everybody, Mel can tell you, everybody was like in shock that Mark McDowell was the junior middleweight champion of the world.
Mm-hmm. What was his record, Hal? What was his overall record, Hal?
Mark's overall record became like about 27-3, something like that, 27-3 after all.
You know what, and that's quite an impressive record. I remember seeing Mark a few Junes back during that Puerto Rican Day festivities. And you had a whole lot of productivity there and positive setup, man, where you had them. Hold on, gentlemen. Don't anybody move. I got a call coming in. On Skype. No, nobody move for a second. We'll be right back. Why is it not coming through? Hmm. call again. Why is it not coming through? Okay, we're going to try to... we're having some problems here. Yeah, Mark Vidal became a product of that whole thing. Juan LaGrone, Juan LaForte. A great stable done by one of the great matchmakers of all time, Harold Weston Jr. Tremendous job there, Harold. Tremendous job.
Yeah, because the last man...
Well, please put this man in the Hall of Fame, please.
Yeah.
Please get a vote for this man.
The last man that Mark fought was so funny was Tommy Hearns, right? And Mark... And they made a fight. They gave Mark a nice piece of money for that fight, okay? It was like about $100,000, $150,000, something like that. And that was a nice piece of money for a guy that wasn't even champion. Yeah, he was champion at the time, right? He was former champion at the time, let's say. So the fight is made, and Mark said, how am I going to beat him? I said, first thing you ain't going to do is look at him when he step in the ring. Don't look at him. I said, don't look at him, because if you look at him, I can tell you, you're going to get scared to death, okay? It ain't going to be the same person you saw at the weigh-in. I'm telling you that right now. So he said, okay. I said, and the other thing is you got to keep your hands up and have your defense. I'm saying, if you can get past the first three rounds or the first four rounds, you might have a shot. You might have a shot. But you got to get past them rounds. And I'm going to tell you, them four rounds going to be like, you went 12, okay? So I'm just letting you know, build your body up, be ready, keep your hands up, because he's coming. And he's got fast hands, too, besides punching so hard. So what am I telling you? You are going to be in trouble in the first four or five rounds. I'm telling you that right now. You ain't going to even win those rounds. You forget about them. Don't even try to win them. Just try to survive. What does he do when he gets into the ring?
You try to fight him.
No. He looked at Tommy over across the ring. And like I told you, fellas, Tommy ain't the same person when he is at the weigh-in.
Okay.
And that's the scary part about it. I'm serious. It's the most... I have never, ever seen a man do a transform situation like that in my whole life in boxing. He's like a new... He's like a bigger, more brutal, vicious guy. He's so big when you see him in the ring beside when you saw him at the weigh-in. And that's the amazing part. And I mean, I'm looking at muscles, strength, height, everything. He's like blown up. And that's what throws you off. That is what throws you off.
And not to mention he can fight a little bit too, huh, Harold?
Yeah, I mean that's I ain't even want to go into that part. That's the scariest most part. And you know he can fight. That's the other part.
Hmm.
And then this, he's got fast hands.
And plus he's tall.
You told me that. You told me about the speed, Harold. You said the three guys you mentioned, and we're gonna close in a second, was Tommy, Howard Davis, and Ali. Remarkable, remarkable. Gentlemen, we're going to close right now. We're going to close out this segment of Sports in Depth. And Harold Weston Jr., double by Harold of the Hoopster, G.W. Michael and Jonas, riding with G.W. on the highway. Gentlemen, we're going to be back on tomorrow. Thanks for having you, as always. And I leave you with three thoughts. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Service to others, the mint you pay for your room here on earth. I am my brother's keeper. The Royal Committee, and my brothers come in all color. Nelson Mandela. Larry Hardesty will take us on out one more time. Go ahead, Larry.
Hi, I'm Larry Hardesty from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. Did you enjoy the show? It was outstanding, but I expect that from the legendary Doc Stanley. Nothing less than the best. As he always says to me, and it's my favorite saying from him, live your life today as if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Words to live by. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great night, and we'll see you next time on Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley.